The Korean FC podcast is kindly sponsored by Radio Taxis. Give them a call, 70353-709. They know the score.
Welcome back to the official Korean FC podcast. We had a little bit of a sabbatical there for a week or two just to, I suppose, digest the end of the season and one thing and another and basically take a little bit of time off. But I'm delighted to say that Johnny McNabb and myself, we're back in harness today. Johnny, haven't seen you in an official capacity for a week or two, which maybe no bad thing, but how's the summer been for you so far?
Aye, grand. Trying to top up the t-shirt tan, you know. Was rolling around Ballycastle there on Sunday, so there's half of me is a bit brown and the other half's pure white, so that's what I'll be spending my summer doing, trying to top up the extra white bits, you know.
Very good, very good. That's about as much information really as we need there. So I'm delighted to say that joining us on the podcast today or this evening is none other than the Korean FC first team manager, Oren Kearney. And Oren, you just come on the podcast, and I'm thinking, I haven't seen your face in a couple of weeks. It's strange. We see you every week and then we don't see you for a week or two.
I'm sure you're not complaining. I'm sure you're not complaining.
No, I didn't say that, Oren, but you know. Yeah, you were just saying before we came on the air there that you were out again this evening with the 2010. So, I mean, really, there's no rest for the wicked in your case, is there?
No, it's been, to be honest, this stage of the season, anybody that meets you will always say the same. Oh, it's nice you have a bit of time off and it's nice to get a break and everything else. I would go on record easily saying that the 6 weeks for me is the most horrible 6 weeks of the whole season. But it's a very important 6 weeks as well. Make no bones about that either. So, you know, there's a huge amount of work behind the scenes. I think last week, I don't think I was in the house one night till after probably 10 o'clock between meeting players and traveling up and down the country and everything else that goes with it. So, one of the nights I just had to wrap it up and come home for fear that the locks would be changed and that I wouldn't get in. but it very much just is, thankfully, Lauren's used to it and it doesn't make it any easier. But this time of the season just very much is along those lines from all angles, both ins, outs, kits, training gears, pre-season, schedules. It just becomes a really relentless time of the year. But as I said, a really important time as well because, you know, the work that you do now is vitally important for the other 40 or 42 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll come to possible ins and outs and whatevers of the summer and the season to come. But I suppose really where we have to start is last season. And as we all know that you're a school teacher and I suppose end of term reports or end of year reports are the big thing in school teachers. I mean, from your point of view, when you look back at the season just gone, Oren, what would be your end of year report really?
You know, I think obviously you've got to look at the stats and the stats don't lie. And I said, we've made progress. There's no doubt. There's no doubting that aspect of it. I think we finished 11 or 12 points beyond where we finished the previous season. Albeit we still finished sixth, I think that's probably more an indication of the standard of the direction of which the league is going, rather than the fact that I suppose of our progress as such. So, you know, we had a lot of changes, and we had a very indifferent first 8 or 10 games of the season. We then went on a tremendous run that clawed a lot of that back, but I suppose the frustrating part for me is that particular first 8 or 10 games where it was up and it was far too up and down, and I appreciate that's going to happen with 10 or 11 new players in, but it hurt us, and particularly with the standard of the league and everything else, it left us playing catch up, and we were always probably just 3 or 4 points away from where we want it to be, from really being in the mix and really getting amongst it, you know, around January, February time. So, you know, from that point of view, I suppose, yes, in one hand, with a huge amount of turnaround of players and everything else, it's good that we've made progress. On the other hand, with where we've been in recent seasons, full-time or not full-time or whatever it may be, you still want to be in those higher levels and you still want to be in those upper parts of the table. But we're also realistic to understand, you know, the way that the league has gone and is going.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I was thinking about that myself before we come on. And when you look at the final placings, Orn, I mean, is it any coincidence that the top three teams, if you like, Larne, Linfield, Glentoran, would be arguably the three most subsidised clubs, if you call it that, or the wealthiest clubs, or the clubs with the biggest squads, or whatever you want to say? Do you think that it's not a coincidence, is it? I mean, that's where you would expect those type of clubs to finish those top three places and those European places.
If they do their jobs right, yeah. And I think if you look across France, Italy, England, Scotland, and no matter where you look at, and you look at size of clubs or budgets or whatever it may be, look at Scotland, Rangers and Celtic. It's the race for third pretty much, you know, every year. And realistically, that race for third is Hearts, Hibs and Aberdeen. And that's the way it is pretty much every season. That's dictated more than anything by the size of those clubs and what they can do with their budget, I suppose, more than anything else. But, you know, we've been very good at going against those odds. We've been very good at upsetting, I suppose, the norm from that point of view. And it's something we have to keep striving to do.
I mean, Johnny, it's very like what Orn says, that all those leagues across Europe, there's a similarity there, and the biggest clubs and the ones with the biggest wallets, if you like, tend to do well. The downside of that, I mean, I know that you have an interest in Scottish football sometimes. Is there a danger then that clubs and supporters or fans of other clubs not so much lose interest, but does it become harder for them to follow a team then if you think that you're fighting for third or fourth place every year?
I think there's probably a realisation as well. And, you know, Corey, I think Corey and I are victims of their own success in recent years. Obviously, like, finished second two or three times, won the Cup and League Cup and Europe and everyone else. And if you're not suddenly challenging for the leagues, even though teams are full-time, you know, people are, you know what social media is like. So, but yeah, look, you only have to look at the German league there this weekend. All Borussia Dortmund had to do was win a game, they won the league, and Bayern Munich still won it. So, yeah, look, when you look at City, they've won, is it five out of the last six leagues? Celtic have won, is it something like 10 out of the last 11? So, it seems to be that the clubs that are able to spend the most money are able to, you know, get over the line. And there's leagues, probably nearly three leagues within a league. That's the way it's sort of looking, you know, and it's still a credit to Corey and Cliftonville that they're still giving the full-time teams a game and not being blown away by them. So, yeah, look, it's going to get tougher, I think. If I read there, was it the bottom three teams or something throughout the league? I think we took 4 or 5 points off the top three or four teams, or even the top six teams. So it's getting really, really harder for them too. So, yeah, it's all about, for Corey, and it's going to obviously be about trying to get the players that want to go full-time and trying to keep in there.
Is it worrying, Johnny, though, if you look over the next number of seasons long term? Does it become worrying, or does it become a challenge that you redouble your efforts to try and compete?
Well, I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. I don't see Kenny Bruce pulling out a Larne anytime soon. Linfield always will be Linfield. The Glens will always have money too. So, you know, I don't see it changing. There's not much point worrying about it. You just have to try and do the best you can to stick with those teams. If you're going there half beaten, well, what's the point? You know, so we're in a sense that I think the gap this year between the top six and bottom six was crazy. It was something like, was it 10 or 11 points, maybe even more. So that idea might be a wee bit worrying, but at the end of the day, by the time the last three or four games on, you don't know who's going to win the league, you don't know who's going to finish Europe, you don't know who's going to get relegated. So it's still, you know, all those battles within the league still made it exciting.
So obviously, Orn, the way that the league is, and Johnny and I were just talking there about the way that the league can shape up. But for Corian, for example, and you as a manager and a group of players, how do you then have to redefine your targets and how do they match up from year to year?
It's really tough, and like you guys are saying there, like I can see the journey that fans have been on for the last six or seven seasons, where it's been littered with second place finishes and cup wins and European and history making and everything that goes with it. But you also have to understand, for a group of players and staff as well, and a big part of the players anyway, have been used to all of that as well. And the adjustment, not just the adjustment from fans of the way the full time has just changed the landscape. If I'm being honest, it's really tough. It's been tough for players and staff as well, because make no bones about it, you enjoy being at the top table, and you enjoy being, you know, like, as much as fans and everybody else get loads out of Irish Cup and Europe and the history and everything that goes with it, you know, the memories and the joy that it brought the playing staff and the backroom staff as well was phenomenal. And that's tough, you know, and as I appreciate on a Saturday and at the end of season, fans and everybody else are frustrated, but I have to say it's really tough on this side as well, in relation to, I suppose, getting your head round that again, because I don't think we've went backwards. I'd be happy to say that we've sustained, and I think we're in and around, you know, the levels. You're definitely there, you know, fitness wise and quality of player and everything else. But sadly, the thing out of our control is just the landscape has changed slightly. And, you know, in simple terms, for us next year, you look at I always say the league table never lies, and you do a huge amount of research into the league table at the end of the season, and I think the top three finished on plus 48, plus 47, and plus 43 goal difference. Our goal difference was plus 20. And in simple terms, that's what I'm looking at in relation to next season, that we've got, if we want to compete and if we want to try and have that season where all stars align and we stay injury free, and we could really go and make a charge like we've made in other seasons, we've got 25 goals to swing in some shape or form. And whether that be another 25 goal season striker to complement Matthew is one way of doing it. Or the other way of doing it, can we find another 10 or 15 goals from somewhere in the squad, but concede 10 less and try it? Because if we're talking about it, you know, the goal difference is plus 47, 48 for those teams. So there's different ways to skin that cat, and there's different ways to do that. And probably the easiest way to do that is probably find 10 or 15 goals on one side and probably try and concede 10 less on the other side. And those are the margins. They're not massive margins. You know, have we missed 10 or 15 good chances this year? We absolutely have. I could think back to numerous good chances that we've created that could have landed as an extra 3 points here and there, or an extra 10 or 15 goals in the season. I can think of just Cliftonville alone of goals where we've absolutely gifted teams this year. I can think of three or four goals there in particular. You tick them off that, and you're only six goals away from reaching that target as well. So as much as it's tough and as much as it's frustrating on that side, the margins also are minimal as well in relation to getting those numbers. And those numbers are numbers that we have to adjust, where yes, in our goals for column, we need to slightly improve on that, but also in our goals against, or you look at that just as your plus column or your goal difference column and say that we've got to try and make a dent of 20, 25 goals into that.
With that in mind, and what you're saying then, Oran, would that colour your thinking over the summer period in terms of what we said at the very start when you're talking to players, potential new recruits or whatever? So those margins, the goals for and the goals against, are they shaping your thinking in terms of bringing players in this summer?
Yeah, yes and no, because no matter what player and what position you would sign, you can have the argument that they will have an impact on one of those two totals. If they're a defensive midfielder or a defender or a goalkeeper, they're obviously going to help out with the goals against column. And if they're maybe a more attacking-minded player, a flair player or a striker, they're obviously an onus there to have an impact on the goals for column. So, you know, I don't think anybody will get off scot-free from that point of view in the summer in relation to who you're trying to recruit. But ideally, you're just trying to sign ones, obviously, that are ideally better or as good as what we've got, that provide as much competition to what we've got as well.
And at this stage, is there anything that you can say? Is there anybody that you can confirm that's maybe coming in the summer, or is it still too early?
Sorry, the microphone's not quite working there. I can't quite hear you. What was that? I'm joking.
I know you are.
Listen, we're working really hard, and I appreciate there's rumours and bits and pieces out there, and there always will be bits and pieces of rumours. A lot of them way off the mark, and sometimes some of them closer to the mark. I suppose for me, and we take great pride in it at the club as well, in relation to we release everything via our own social media first. We try and do that to try and exploit our own Twitter and Facebook and club website and everything else. And, you know, that's always been the protocol. It's always something we've hammered over the last few years. And it'll be no different because, you know, we've got to be a big advocate of that, and we've got to try and ensure that we keep promoting that aspect of it. So we're working hard. You know, hopefully there's a few bits and pieces that are close to completion. But still, you know, there's a long way to go. And the transfer window in the summer generally takes that format where there's a bit of early business done, then there's a lot of to and fro, and then towards the end of it, there's generally business done when people get itchy feet as well. The end business isn't as good as the early business because ideally you would like everybody in for pre-season. The more games and training they can have under you, the better they settle and the more ready they are for the start of the season.
And you mentioned pre-season, obviously no European football this season for Corian. Obviously, pros and cons with that. When do you envisage the players getting together again? Then it seems to get almost earlier every year for some reason.
Yeah, I think the start date they're looking for the league this year is I think is going to be around the Saturday, the 5th of August, which is probably 1 week slightly, or usually it would have been around the 11th, 12th, 13th of August. So, so if it's the 5th of August, as we think, we're probably looking at around 20th, 22nd of June coming in. With most of the plans done, I just haven't nailed an exact date at this point in time.
It's crazy, Johnny, to be sitting here and thinking about pre-season and training and the start of the league in August, because as we all know, that the weeks go around very, very quickly, and it will be no time. But as you work in the media, the social media at the club, Johnny, but you're also probably a supporter first and foremost, and you can understand what Oran's saying about how rumours start, and that's the best pastime for supporters of any club in the summer, isn't it? It's just coming up with ideas and rumours of players that are coming in and leaving.
No, I've read and seen about 50 players that are coming in the summer, so I don't know if Oran or Collins find a money tree high, but there you go. No, listen, it's one of the things that they just always seem to take time. I joked on the podcast before, I hear from Oran more than my wife probably in the next couple of months, just to get stuff announced. And yeah, just these things obviously just take time. And yeah, it'd be, as Oran said, it'd be nice to, in my opinion, as a supporter, it'd be lovely to add a few more goals to our team. And then Oran replied saying, what strikers are out there? And sort of thing, you have to think, and shake his eye, you are right. So, yeah, it's one of them things. I do think, you know, Chevy was at 29 goals. I think the next one was Connor with 10. And, you know, a few more players maybe stepping up the plate with more goals will certainly help us.
Oran, on that, the striking thing, Andrew Mitchell obviously has had a torrid time with injuries at the club since his arrival as well. How's he? And you know, because obviously it's been a difficult time for him, but can supporters expect the same maybe at the start of next season?
They can, yeah, and it has. It's been a horrible time for him pretty much since he signed for the club. It's been littered with injuries and unfortunate ones at that, right down to a few other bits and pieces that weren't even really football specific injuries. And again, it's very hard. I don't mean to discuss the greater detail of it all, because at the end of the day, you're dealing with somebody's personal life as well. But I can assure you, there was a few that were football based, and there was one in particular that probably has taken 5 or 6 months that wasn't football based, where we had to be. I had a really, really fortunate, really lucky in different contexts in relation to that. It was because of football that we were able to detect the issue and get it sorted. So, and it's very hard in this day and age, and I appreciate with social media and everything else that we try to put as much information as we can out there. And of course, we want fans to know everything, but sadly, there are times as well, there are some things that just aren't for the public forum and aren't for from that aspect. So the good thing for him is he finally has got across there to London a couple of months ago. And to be fair, the specialist that he went and seen has also done work with the likes of, I think, a few Premier League, I think possibly Saka and Rashford and ones like that in relation to groin problems. So he's through all that. He's working really hard with Kieran Ferris at this point in time. He comes up once a week on a Thursday night to do a bit of work in the gym with a few other lads. And then Kieran sets him a program that he'll do two or three times a week down home. But ideally, you know, he's moving probably the best he's ever moved since he's been there. And ideally, we're hoping that he can hit the ground running in pre-season.
You know what? On a personal level, it would just be great for him, wouldn't it? Because, you know, the big man, I think he deserves a break, doesn't he? And everybody would love to see him just getting a real good run at it. And from your point of view, if you could have the likes of him and Chevy up front, it changes things for you as a manager, doesn't it? Having those options.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Like we've just never seen anything. And again, a lot of it's not his fault, and that's the hard part. And I hate how players get lambasted out of injuries. Myself as a player, and you wouldn't wish them on anybody else, and you don't wish them on yourself. It's the last thing that any player wants. It's the loneliest part of football. It's the toughest part of football, and particularly for Andrew, the distance that he drives to come to the club, it has to be soul destroying to drive up, go into changing room, get changed and head into the gym instead of heading out onto the pitch to train with the lads. And I've been there myself, sadly, as a player, and it is soul destroying. It is absolutely soul destroying. So, you know, for him and to have come through that, and he's had a lot of support from both staff and players. And I think for him, he feels the same, where he has, I suppose, business that he wants to take care of now. He really wants to hit the ground running in pre-season and make up for lost time and really show what he's about.
And the other side of that, you can empathise with him. As you said, you had a series of injuries in your career. And I guess if you come through those experiences, make you a stronger player and a stronger person, I guess.
You would hope so, and hungrier as well, because I think you always have that feeling of making up for lost time. And he's lost a year. You know, he's lost a year of his career there, pretty much, or more. And I think with that, always brings a hunger in players, and we've had success. We didn't sign him with the view that he would miss a year and be out for that amount of time. But now that he's gone through that, you know, you're hoping that he can come out the other side of it with a lot of fire in his belly and ready to go and prove everybody what he's all about.
Now, Johnny, from a supporter's point of view, that's great news, isn't it? Because, you know, we've all wanted to see Andrew, and for one reason or another, as Warren has just explained, he's been unable to do that. But if you could have him in a position come the start of next season to be potentially a member of the starting 11 and maybe sharing some of the burden up front with the likes of Chevy and that, I mean, that's something to get excited about, isn't it?
Of course it is. And I think, you know, we say all the time, but footballers have seen, you know, the high life there in Ulson. You need to remember that he's a human being at the end of the day with a young family. And I'm sure as frustrated, you know, as the fans are, they haven't seen Andrew in action, he's feeling 10 times more frustrated than everyone else. And yeah, look, it'll be great to see him back. I'm sure he'll be relishing getting the boots on in pre-season and you know, and hopefully making up for lost time. And look, he scored plenty of goals against us with every team he was at in his career. So it would be great to see him getting the goals for Corey Ian. And yeah, look, it'd be like a different signing for us. It'd be like a different dimension to you up front. And yeah, so no, fingers crossed that he can get through everything and he can get back for us.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny, great news about potentially Andrew Mitchell coming back into the fold again after a horrendous time of injuries. And Oren, I'm not going to ask you like what your lineup or your selection or formation next year would be, but potentially like two up front next year with Chevy and Mitchell, for example, would that be something that would be on your radar?
Hell's Kitchen. Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose a lot of time, if you watch it this season, where it's like a game of chess a lot of times, depending on who you're playing. And there's been as many times as we've been with one up, maybe with Chevy by himself as such, or four behind him, and there's been plenty of times we've been a three, a five, and a two, which allows you to play two out and out strikers up front. And again, depending on who we play, like for example, Larne this season were a 3-5-2 all season long, and with the quality of player that they have, if we didn't match them up, it became really tough. But when we did match them up, we generally held our own against them, or we generally, you know, got a bit of success against them. So There are other times maybe when it's not required, and it's maybe more, I suppose, thought and inventiveness in behind maybe the one target man. So, but you need that versatility in your squad, and it's very important, you know, to have those bodies in your squad. And as you say, you know, Mitch, all being well, you know, if he can come back and get through pre-season, you know, will give us a different type of, I suppose, we had Matthew and maybe the likes of Mickey and Glax at times played there, and Eamon Fife possibly there. But I suppose Mitch is probably more of an old-fashioned number nine again, a bit of a target man, robust, and sometimes, you know, what's needed in the league.
Yeah, it just gives you a different option, doesn't it, really? And that's as a manager, that's obviously something that you're always looking for. Looking ahead, just, you know, pre-season, as you said, is coming up, and you're looking at players, etc. But it'll be probably a strange pre-season and a strange season in some ways for you, Warren, because you'll look round to your right and your old sidekick will not be there, Trevor McKendry. This will be the first season that you've gone into a campaign without Trevor by your side for quite some time, I suspect.
Ever. First season ever.
Ever.
As a manager.
It's not too late to reconsider, you know.
Trevor reminded me of it, that, you know, I had heard whispers, this is when I was taking the Limavady job. I just retired from Linfield, and I was about to take the Limavady job, and I knew at my age and profile at 29 years of age, I wanted someone I wouldn't say the opposite end of the scale, but someone who'd been there and done it and had a lot more experience than I had. And I'd heard Trevor was leaving Port Stewart at that point in time, and it took me 3 or 4 attempts, but I managed to persuade him. You know, his plan was, as he told me then, he was leaving Port Stewart to retire and go and play golf and do everything else. And I managed to persuade him to come in, and I think it was one of those, you know, come in and try it and see how it goes for half a season or a season. And we were joking there the other day, 12 years later, he finally gets to retire. it's been a crazy journey from that point of view, but I think one that he absolutely deserves, and I can't begrudge him, to be honest with you.
No, and did you know Trevor when you approached him to join you at Limavady, or were you aware of him, or
absolutely? How would you not be aware of Trevor? He was, yeah, you know, Mr. Football around this area, and as much as I think he was managing Port Stewart at that time, I'd been playing for Linfield, but through different coaching courses and fun weeks and all the rest, I knew Trevor really, really well, and I'd always come across him. And I suppose he was always one of those people who you had a lot of time for because of how he conducted himself and how he went about his business, and football mad as well. So it seemed the perfect fit from that point of view, where, you know, I had no problem admitting that I was going in absolutely green behind it. Yes, I had a few qualifications, I had an A license behind me and all the rest, but, you know, putting theory into practice is a totally different kettle of fish, and having Trevor there from that point of view, you know, he was a brilliant foil at Limavady. And, you know, particularly in Corian, you know, in the tough times of those early days as well. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for it. You know, that level of trust, and Trevor's someone I would trust till the cows come home in relation to, I would have no doubt, and in the 12 years that we've been together, he would never carry anything, have a bad word to say, and would have your back at all times. And people like that, they're a dying breed. You know, they're worth their weight in gold from that point of view. And I think, you know, those are the qualities that Trevor had, and why I think he was such a success with us.
It'll be strange for you, but I mean, Johnny, it'll be strange too, just watching from the press box for supporters too, when you come out there and Trevor not be there, because he has been a part of the surroundings and the background for quite some time, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And listen, I lived in Bushmills for all my life, so I've known Trevor as well. And the first thing he said to me on the phone, he was like, the only reason I'm stepping down is to make sure hackers like you don't wreck Bushfoot Golf Club. So there you go. That was my warning. So, but yeah, no, look, he's given 12 fantastic years with Corian, and, you know, and Warren admitted it, their things just weren't totally plain sailing at the start, and look at the journey that he's been on. And, you know, people forget that Trevor was a fan too. So I'm sure it was a doubly sad weekend at home if Corian didn't win, obviously, and a really excited one if they did. So no, yeah, look, you couldn't begrudge him, as Warren said, and yeah, he's been a great servant to Corian, and I suppose a really good friend to Warren.
And how much are you going to miss him, Warren, do you think?
Hopefully not too much, because, and again, hope Caroline's not listening, but we've managed to pursue, ideally, and because you know Trevor's DNA and his makeup, where he still is football mad. And I do envisage in a few months' time, there'll be some type of itchy feet that will come in there in relation to wanting that bit of a fix. And I appreciate there's grandchildren and all that go with it, and he'll get bits and pieces of that. But I think, you know, the way it's evolving now on a totally different tangent, the step from under 20s to first team level is so tough that what we were able to do years ago with, say, the Lindons, the Jamie McGonigals, the Brad Lyons, and just fire them all into a team and let them sink or swim for 40 or 50 games and then reap the benefits of it. We're not really in a position where we can do that anymore. There's too much expectation. The league has moved to a level where it's so hard to do that, that a lot of the times now, the pathway for these young players, like say Caelan Brennan, Lewis Tosh, and ones like that, is possibly to go out, cut your teeth, and get those 30 or 40 games of senior football behind you at Championship 1 or Championship 2, which in one state is brilliant for us, but in the other aspect is they play on Tuesday nights and play on Saturdays when we play. So yes, I know a huge amount of managers around the league, and it's easy to gain a huge amount of information. How did such and such do against you? Or speak to Paul at Limavady, say, for those two lads, and say, how have they been doing? I think the joy of that this year will be Trevor, because we've worked together for so long, knows exactly what we're looking for and what the expectation is. So, you know, ideally for us, we get a scouts pass every year. We probably haven't been in a position where we're able to use it a huge amount. And I'm not saying, Caroline, don't worry that he'll be out every weekend. But if there is, maybe over the winter time when there's not as much golf, or he has a spare weekend here or there, it might be that if we hear of somebody who's doing well at, say, Derby, or doing well at Institute or Limavady or wherever it may be, or Tobermore, or at different levels, and at no matter where it may be, you know, that Trevor could pop along, watch them, and then it gives him an excuse to drop in on a Tuesday night, say hello, and let us know how certain players have been getting on. So that would be the plan, again, with no contract, no contractual ties, no obligation. And it might be that, you know, in September we don't see him at all. It might be in November we see him a couple of Tuesday nights and he's gone and watched two or three games, and it'll very much be ad hoc that way to suit him. But I think it gives him that nice avenue where he's got an excuse to drop down on a Tuesday or a Thursday, say hello, and not be a stranger. Because not just with the staff, you know, there's a lot of players there as well who've so much time for Trevor. And you know, it's important that he just doesn't cut those ties and disappear.
Completely, yeah. I mean, that sounds to me like the perfect job for Trevor, doesn't it? Because he just loves being out and about football, and he loves, and he knows everybody at every club that comes to the ground, whether they're Premiership, League One, Two, doesn't matter. He knows everybody. And for Trevor to be able to go and watch players and just to keep in that environment, it's just the perfect avenue and the perfect job for him. And no better man for the job. But if Trevor's moving on from his position, does that mean a reshuffle within the backroom team, or somebody else coming in, or what way do you foresee it for the season coming?
It does, and you know, I suppose you look at that every year, not just in playing staff and backroom staff, but you know, you're down to a range of different things and budgets and everything else. So definitely it will be, you know, we're definitely on the lookout, and hopefully in the next week or so be able to have something to bring to the table from that point of view as well. So and these things take time as well, because, you know, as mentioned there, you're into that, I suppose, circle of trust. You're into that aspect of how important, you know, the staff are on and off the pitch, and particularly on the training ground as well. You know, we lost Paul halfway through the season as well, who went back to Limavady. So it has been, you know, slightly different from that point of view, and does need and will need addressed as well. And again, that's something along with, I suppose, playing staff that we're looking to address this summer also.
You can see, Johnny, from what Oren's saying there, he was right. This break in the summer does tend to be the busiest time of a manager's year, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, you can just tell how busy Oren is, and I'll probably want to get busier. So, but yeah, look, that's the joys of management. And we interview Oren every week, and how many times have we asked him why be a manager? Why do it? So, there must be something good out of it. But
my wife says that all the time too.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
There must be a masochistic thing. I think it has to be, like, but I guess it's in your blood, isn't it? It's a bug, it's a drug, whatever you want to call it. It's just something there that you can't do without. But once you get used to it, Oren, I guess you just want more of it. It is almost like a drug, isn't it?
You do, and it does, and I'll be honest, like there's levels of guilt with it as well that are hard to deal with as well in relation to family and time, you know, particularly this time of year and everything else. But it is addictive, and it's one of those where, you know, I'll draw up our end of season stats. I have stats from the DNR that I started at Coleraine that I keep myself. You know, I've the league table all on one page of each finish of every year, goals for, against, wins, everything else, and you analyse all of that, and you do, and I suppose I've shared a bit of it there into the type of thinking that you go through in relation to, you know, where were we this season. And the easiest thing to do is deal with hypothetical stuff and hearsay and everything else, but the best thing to do is to deal with fact. And the fact is, when you look at the league table and when you look at particularly wins, draws, losses, or more importantly goals for and goals against, there's a correlation there with the teams that who finish top. There's also a correlation with teams who finish, I suppose, mid-table. There's also a correlation there with teams that finish bottom. It's not rocket science to know how that correlation looks. But for me, there's certain things and certain milestones that we have to reach if we want to try and move a level and try and get up a level. And that's the addictive part of it. That's the part that's relentless. That's the part that doesn't allow you to sleep at times. It's the part that allows you to think of nothing else. And the scheming and everything else that goes with it to try and bring us to a point where we're ultra combative. And I think the final bit that adds to that is the fact that we've done it in the past, and we've had a, you know, I suppose that year we won the Irish Cup, and, you know, Lauren won the league this year with 87 or 86 points or something. We finished second on 89 points that year. So, you know, we had enough points that year to win the league at a canter. And I think that's probably the worst part of it, because when I talk about, you know, the stars need to align and you need that season where you stay injury free and everybody's firing on all cylinders. And we've done that, and we've proved that it's possible, and you've proved that it's, you know, that you can go and do it, albeit in a part-time league. But that's the part that leaves you itching to want to go again and want to go and find a way of doing it.
It is just, as you say, it is addictive. And that's probably why you see managers in the game for so long. Although, having said that, this summer we've seen the departure of an old colleague, an old friend of yours, and David Jeffrey, an old rival of yours, as it was in latter years. And I mean, he's been in the game probably arguably nearly longer than most. He's won as much as maybe more than most as well. I mean, it'd be a big loss to you, Oran, because you know him. You played for him. He was your manager at Linfield, and then you're in rival camps in one of the biggest derbies in local football. So it's going to be a strange season as well for you, not coming up against him and pitting your wits against him.
Yeah, it'll be different. But I'm glad, to be honest with you, and I rung him up to tell him that as well a couple of days after it had been announced. Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me all right? Yeah.
Is
it froze there? No, it will be different, but I think, you know, a good different. And obviously, you know, the best part of my playing career was played under David, and the most successful part of my career. As then, as you said, it became the opposite, where, you know, you were enemies pretty much. And I said this to David, and we had a real frank conversation about it a couple of weeks ago when I rung him up to wish him all the best and whatever he's doing moving forward, where it absolutely changed the dynamic of our relationship, and it had no choice but to change the dynamic of our relationship, where it did become someone that you wouldn't speak to as often, or that you had to, I suppose, withhold information from or whatever else, because whether you like it or not, it was your arch enemy and your derby rival, and it had to become that. And it didn't make it easy, and it did, if I'm being honest, it didn't make it that enjoyable. I think we both coped with it really well. But I did say that to him a couple of weeks ago, that I'm, in one bit I'm sad for him, but in the other I'm actually glad, because it means I can resume a normal relationship with him and look forward to having, I suppose, a normal friendship that we've had and shared over 15 odd years, 20 odd years nearly.
Yeah, he still gave you a big kiss though. That's the important part.
Well, that's maybe the only part you're maybe not looking forward to as much. But no, beyond that, listen, he's, you know, it's David's David, and you know, he even as Ballymena, you know, particularly at home against Ballymena and derby games and all the rest, you know, he played the villain and everything else, and loved you know, a stare at the fans and everything else that goes with it. And I think added, you know, to all of that as well, and played the role success, you know, really, really well. So, you know, for him, it was a heck of a stint and a serial winner and a man who just knows nothing but, you know, how to get the finals and win trophies, albeit a bit tougher at Ballymena. But, you know, it doesn't change, you know, the history of what he's achieved in the game.
No, and probably a good enough time to go now as well, you know, when your reputation's still intact, et cetera, as well. Johnny, any indication? You're obviously working on the newsletter. Any whispers about potentially a new Ballymena manager? They're expecting somebody to announce somebody very soon.
Yeah, I read there that they were saying that they had interviews last week. So I think it's Warren Feeney and Jim Irvine's in for it and Paul Key, and I think Gerard Little turned it down. So yeah, look, it's going to be an interesting one. I think obviously they've lost a lot of players. I think Jim Irvine would be an interesting one. I think expectations maybe at Ballymena will be slightly lower because of the players that they are losing, and it's going to be a transitional period. And I think Jim would probably be less pressure on him to do well. Obviously, it's his first job too. But he's had a career, and I think he played with Oran as well, that he would demand respect and everyone else. So yeah, look, it just depends what road they go down. You know, same like Cliftonville as well, they still haven't appointed anybody either. So it just shows you nearly how hard it is to get the right person. So whereas Newry obviously had a seamless sort of the assistant Gary Boyle stepped up. So yeah, look, it's gonna be weird playing Ballymena now and not seeing DJ on the sidelines. And you know, to be fair to him, look, this cup record at Ballymena was exemplary. How many cup finals did they get to? Unfortunately for them, that they didn't go over in the line, I think three or four of them. But you know, obviously he knew how to get his teams to a cup final. And yeah, look, it'll be, hopefully he stays around in the game.
Oran, are you surprised Cliftonville haven't appointed anybody? Because, I mean, it's been a good week or two since Paddy left.
I don't know, because honestly, I haven't paid a huge amount of attention to either of the two. But as I say, because it's so relentless at the minute, and you know, what, who or when they appoint or whatever else won't have a huge impact on us. And it is such a short period of time. It goes so quickly. You know, I'm probably 3 weeks into it and 3 weeks nearly to pre-season. I land through the door first, bedraggled on the first night of pre-season, and all the players will land back in buzzing and ready to go again. So it's important just to try and keep the focus on the recruitment aspect of it and the planning aspect of it. And to be honest, I suppose it suits us. You know, the longer it goes, you know, the longer, the less chance of I wouldn't mean the less chance of doing business, but I suppose it allows other teams to grab a march on or whatever else. And for us, and I know it sounds crazy, but any bit of insecurity or instability at the clubs around us, I suppose, sadly, is only a good thing for us. And that's just the harsh reality of the business we're in.
That is. It's somebody else's misfortune is your fortune or whatever it is as well. What about in terms of the squad? There was a couple of the younger lads got chances in the first team towards the end of this year. I'm thinking of Senan Devine and Alfie Gaston as well. Going forward, do you see those guys getting a look in more next year? Or again, is it just a case of dropping them in very cautiously and just as and when you feel it's the right time?
It's sadly the latter, and you say that with the greatest respect, because it's a results business, and whether or not you've started any of those young lads, I remember years ago when we did throw all the kids in, like for weeks it was, we're rubbish, just throw in the kids anyway, they can't do any worse. And then we threw the kids in for four or five games and get beat for four or five games, and it didn't change a thing. Where, you know, it was still, you're still getting pelters and you're still being called and questioned in every way, shape or form, even though there was loads of teenagers playing. So I don't think it pacifies anybody. It's definitely not done as a circus trick, and it's only done if they're good enough or in and around the same levels of the players of which we've got. You know, obviously we have a few injuries. You know, obviously Ronan Wilson will move on, Cahir Freel will move on, Rodney Brown is pretty much out for the season, Adam Mullen was coming out of contract, obviously has snapped his kneecap, and he snapped his patella in half and required an operation. And again, to me, it just shows you the level of club, of who we are now and where we're working now, where possibly many another club would have probably just set Adam free and said, good luck. And again, thankfully, the board backed me on this as well. But like, Adam's been with us 7 or 8 years. He won an Irish Cup with us. He made a tackle in an Irish Cup final that secured the trophy for us at 2-1, or helped us to go on and secure a trophy.
Yeah.
And albeit the last season or two hasn't been the way Adam would like it or whatever else. But Adam's in a position now where, with a month of his contract to go, he wrecked his knee in the line of duty for us as such. So we'll be extending Adam's contract by a year again, more than anything, because he'll probably not function or not play a huge amount of football. But I think it's our duty of care, and the least that we could do is ensure that Adam gets the right medical attention and everything else to get himself back up to a level where he's good to go and play football again. But with that, it will also take a little bit out of the budget and everything else, and we've got to be then prudent moving forward in other aspects.
Just keep scouting for players and at it. And obviously, a couple of the young guys from the club are and the county squad for the Super Cup A&I as well, and I think your young lads in the Super Cup as well, Oran, I think, if I'm right in saying.
Yes, they're in the very, very junior ones, so loads of hype and all about that. But for the older ones as well, it's great, and you know we've a clatter of ones throughout the different age groups who are playing. You know, the likes of Senan and Alfie, I think, are both, you know, the Super Cup as well this year. And it's a tough one as well because, you know, pre-season's a time where you particularly can expose those young players to a bit more game time and everything else because there's less pressure and there's more game opportunity. The hard part of that is it's weighed down now with you want to be respectful of the opportunity that they have to play in the Super Cup as well. So, you know, they'll probably miss the majority of training and games with the team. There's a few other ones there, the likes of Luca Doherty, Corey McLaughlin and a few others who have done really well for the 20s. You know, we'll probably bring a crux of them up for part of pre-season as well to get a real look at them and throw them into 3 or 4 games as well to get an understanding of where they're at to try and help, you know, make decisions moving forward for their careers.
I mean, I guess that's all you can do, bring them up into the squad for pre-season, see how they get on, and if they do well and you help them to unearth one or two, then it's an absolute bonus for you going forward, isn't it?
It is, and it's so important. And you know, obviously, you know, Patrick came through a couple of years ago or last year, and his development was frightening. And you know, to be fair, Senan and Alfie are probably the two this year who've deserved and kicked the most. Luca Doherty probably not too far behind either. So, you know, it's testament, I suppose, to the work that's been done there. But the sad part is if you know, you go and watch an under 20s match on a Tuesday night and go and watch a first team match on a Saturday, and the gulf is frightening. And that's the thing we're finding the toughest. And I suppose if you look throughout the league and all teams, it's very, very hard to remain combative. It's very, very hard to keep winning games, but to also be blooding 16, 17, 18-year-olds who are green behind the ears and who don't have a huge amount of experience. And it's finding that happy medium of being able, I suppose, to sustain that development, but in simple terms, keep winning games, because at the end of the day, that's what you're judged on.
It is, Johnny, whether we like it or not, it's about winning games. That's the bottom line, isn't it? We're all, in every walk of life, we're all judged by results, and particularly in sport and football on this occasion. It's all about results and what Oran's saying. Yes, obviously you would like to bleed in one or two of the crop of young players, but there's very little opportunity to do that if every Saturday the pressure and the onus is on you to pick up 3 points.
Yep, and you know, we mentioned, well, I said about the top six and bottom six and the gaps, and you know, you nearly have to be perfect now every week to get 3 points. And you know, 9 times out of 10, if you drop points, you know, Lauren, Linfield, Lintorn, Cliftonville, they're not all playing each other, Crusaders even, they're probably going to be likely to pick up maximum points. So yeah, look, it is tougher. And again, it just shows you how well PK done when he came in the season before last now, that how well he done and kicked on. And I bumped into him at the 21s training there last week, and the shoulders were up and the voice is even deeper and everything. So he just looks like he's becoming a man.
Best mate with Becky Rice now.
I know, hey. So yeah, look, he's now he just looks like a man, really. So yeah, it's harder. It is definitely harder to bring players in, but it's one of the things, if you can nurture one or two in as the season goes on, then happy days.
And it's a busy time for Oran in terms of management at the club, Johnny. But I guess as well, for you, you know, you do an awful lot of work, media, social media with the club. Busy time for you as well, and there's always opportunities for other people to get involved, isn't there, if they're that way inclined?
Yeah, busy time. Obviously, it's nearly trying to create stuff to put out, and you know, and so for example, and Orange pretty good with this. If there's contracts, we nearly just drag out one every day just to get to keep the things refreshed. And yeah, look, as my new job with the newsletter, it's my own time is becoming even more limited than it was. So yeah, we've put up a post there if anyone wants to come in and dab their hand out and get a bit of experience. All the information's on the website.
And season tickets as well, also on sale, I think.
Yeah, season tickets go on sale on Wednesday. So yeah, look, there's been a slight price increase, but as I said, the absolutely everybody, everyone's going up. Whether you go to the supermarket, go to fuel up your car, buy something from a shop, whatever it is, everything's going up. And you know, I think we had a price freeze there for 3 years. And I think by the time you buy a season ticket, you're still saving us at 3 or 4 games as well. So. Yeah, look, the crowds, and I'm sure Orne will chat with us too, but the crowds last year were brilliant, both home and away, and they really, really do make a difference. And, you know, I still remember Larne that Friday night when Linden scored a penalty 3-1, and it felt there were 3,000 stadium. It felt, honestly, felt about three times that. So if you can get the showgrounds under lights rocking, it's a great ground to watch football.
I mean, Orne, as Johnny's right, like the fans are a big part of the club as well, aren't they? And Marshall Gillespie probably could have helped me out with the stats, but I think maybe third largest average home attendance or something like that last season. I mean, that shouldn't go unnoticed either, or should it? Like, the commitment of supporters is second to none.
No, it shouldn't. And I think just a big well done to everybody around the club, and I suppose I think the branding of the club, the direction the club is going, both on and off the pitch, at academy level and everything, you know, right down even to this time last year, I think the launch of the Nike deal in relation to the gear and the training gear and the kits, and it just, you know, you see people walking around the area now wearing like a home or away kit or some of the track suits or training gear. It looks so smart and so professional, and I think the new pitch in the last couple of years as well, just has taken older ground and nostalgic ground, but an older ground and really polished it up and really cleaned it up. And as Johnny says there, you know, particularly some of the night games, when you get a big crowd in and a big buzz of some of those top six games under lights, or maybe in some of the dark Christmas nights on a Saturday when it's getting dark at 4 o'clock, whatever it may be, there's a heck of an atmosphere about it and a heck of a buzz about it. And it's so important. And, you know, we need every advantage that we can get. We need to have, you know, it does need to become that cauldron. It does need to become that place that, you know, teams fear coming to because of the crowd and because of how hard it is to get a result there. And, you know, all of those ingredients are important for a successful season. There's so much the players can do, but there's so much the fans can do as well. And you know, it can't be underestimated, the help and that all those people have by coming and being as loud and as proud as possible.
And, you know, to be fair as well, it's good value. You know, going to Irish League games, buying a season ticket, or even just going there, watch a match, good value as well for what's on offer and what's on display, Orne, isn't it? I mean, if you're against all things or going to England to watch a football match or whatever, it's ridiculously inexpensive, if you like.
Absolutely, and as Johnny rightfully said, that, you know, the price of everything has gone through there. If you know, milk's doubled, milk's bread, everything, petrol, diesel. But to take your young lad or family across now to go and watch a game in Scotland or to go to Manchester or London or whatever it may be for a weekend to go and watch a game of football, you're probably close to £800-900 maybe all in by the time.
That's bad, isn't it?
Your hotels, flights, tickets, and everything that goes with it, and the cost of what it is for a season ticket with us. And let's be honest, the entertainment from it, you know, if you look at probably the 18 or 19 home games this year, and then take the cup games into it, there's been some unbelievable performances. There's been some brilliant goals. And yes, you know, and it's again, you could go to England or Scotland and pick a bad weekend and find a 0-0 draw or a really poor performance or a real drab performance, and you get the odd one of those. But I think we're all in agreement that the standard of the Irish League in particular, and I think the new pitch lends a lot to that as well, to the style of football and the quality of football that can be played, where it is value for money, and I make no bones about saying that, that it's, you know, it is a good investment, and it is something that ideally families or groups of people can do now, where, you know, I look at the match day on a Saturday at the Showgrounds, and it's something I suppose I've never experienced, but, you know, the upstairs, there's the VIP lounge, there's the shed and bar as well, and, you know, there's early kickoffs, people arrive for the early kickoff, have a couple of beer, the view from the viewing lounge and upstairs is as good as it gets, probably panoramic of the pitch. Some people stay behind afterwards then for a 5:30 kickoff, whatever it may be, and, you know, corporate meals and all those types of things, you know, it's a great day out, and, you know, a lot of people love it, and, you know, you do see a lot of faces there who are starting to come out and really, really enjoy it and really make a day of it, and as I say, it's great for us. You know, we went through the whole COVID thing of no fans and hearing coughs and splutters and everything else, and cheers when goals went in and everything else, so it's nice to get back to those full houses now and real good crowds.
It is, as you said, value for money. I think what you just said, Oran, just underlines something that came into my head this week, just about the community aspect of the club. And one of the things that came into my head was the Hummingbird Project, which, you know, the club is very well associated with now. And that was really brought home to me this week by the sad, untimely passing of Roger Anderson, former sports editor of the Chronicle and a former colleague of my own for over 30-odd years at various junctures. And his passing and the manner of his passing as well, and the Hummingbird Project was referenced at his funeral as well. And I think, you know, it would be remiss of me and the podcast not to pay tribute to Roger, to his sister Gillian and brother Michael, who are all well known at the Corian Showgrounds for their love of Corian Football Club. And just want to pass on my sympathies and everybody's sympathies at the club to the family of Roger at this sad time. And I'm sure, Oran, the Hummingbird Project link up is something that you would applaud as well.
It is, and you know, we pass on our condolences as well. You know, I'm sure it's been a horrible week for, I can't even begin to think of the week that it's been for everybody, you know, around Roger's passing. So, and as you say, the Hummingbird Project is something we've been massive advocates for, and we've tried to do as much work as possible for, because we do take pride, you know, that we are a community club, and it's something that's bandied about a huge amount. But to me, you've got to practice what you preach, and it's so important that, you know, we don't just throw out that off the cup comment that it's a community club, that we've got to actually, you know, really buy into everything, both on and off the pitch, that's going on around the place. And there's some brilliant organisations, and Hummingbird being one of them, with great initiatives, and so important for, I suppose, people to get on board with, and in this current climate when things can be so tough.
And I think Roger's passing really just brought it home to me that the work they do is very valuable and very valid as well. And Johnny, you're the same. You would obviously refer and back up what has been said there.
100%, Damien, and it's one of them things where obviously when somebody sadly passes away, you don't obviously know that well. It's always the tributes that you look towards, and, you know, and some of the words that have been said about Roger and his work, and, you know, he's a fantastic journalist and producer as well, and I know only that he's a good person. And I remember me and you were walking the beach with him when he'd done this big sponsored walk. It must have been about a year or two ago, and yeah, look, it's obviously sad, obviously it is, and it just reinforces how vital the work is of the Hummingbird and everybody else, and yeah, look, if there's anybody that needs to speak to somebody around, just please just speak out, and obviously pass on my condolences to the family.
Yeah, I think we all agree with that. Right, well, guys, I think our time here is nearly up. Oran has got to go and meet another couple of players, I'm sure. He's nothing better to do of an evening, so just head out on the road and go meet a few players somewhere. Is that the way it works?
Pretty much. No, I think that's me done for tonight now, or the locks good. Will be changed.
Good man. We'll await news. Johnny will keep us up to date on social media if anything happens over the next day or a week or so. So we shall keep an eye out as fans, and hopefully we'll have some news in the next day or so. So, Oran, just to wrap it up, just like to say thank you very much for giving your time this evening, because as you said, and we know you're a very busy man at this time of the year. So appreciate your time and for filling us in on what's happening around the club. So thank you very much, and enjoy the Super Cup.
I will do. A pleasure, and thank you very much again for all the work that you guys do. It's greatly appreciated. And as I said again, you know, on the season ticket aspect of it, it's so important. So please, I just hope that everybody can get out there and keep supporting the club.
I would back that up, because it is a good day out. Whether you go home or away, it's a good day out. It's good crack, isn't it, Johnny?
Yep, look, I say all the time, it's the same people and sit in the same seats, say the same things, cheer on the same team.
Slag the same people off.
Slag the same, change it, Kearney, after 10 minutes. I hear that one. I hear that one a lot.
I'm going to tattoo you that on the arm.
I'm getting the dig in, you know, because we only have 2 minutes left, so I've timed this really, really well. So.
Very good. He can't answer you back. So, right, well, here. Yes, you want to say something, Lauren?
No, all good. I'm going to take the moral high ground here, and I'll not reply to Johnny's low dig.
Very good. Revenge is a dish best served cold, or don't forget that.
I'll get him in the long grass.
Well, here, yeah, thank you very much, Johnny. Thank you very much, and thank you to everybody who continues to listen to the podcast. We will be back on a more regular basis in the next little while, and until then, see you soon. Bye bye.